Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. I am here, as always, in studio with my extremely attractive audio engineer, ready to roll out. Got to give a shout out to my other brother, Daryl, who has no doubt already downloaded the broadcast as he is driving. Back to where is he going here? He's going to Wisconsin, right? Is it Wisconsin? It's Wisconsin. The other brother, Daryl, still making it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview, even though he's at a remote location, very remote, as a matter of fact. But a shout out to Daryl to start things off. Big news, big news week it was indeed. Where do I want to start? I want to start with probably the biggest story. Well, not, maybe not of the decade, but it's a big story. Burkina Faso, an African nation. Yeah, Burkina Faso has put a stop to the export of donkeys, donkey skins, as a matter of fact, to Chinese exporters. The donkey skins are boiled to produce a key ingredient in the traditional Chinese remedy, ejiao, which are believed to improve a blood circulation and a cure condition, including a dizziness, irregular menstruation, and insomnia. Donkey skin is very good. A number of African countries, according to The Independent in London, have banned China from buying their donkeys, saying demand for the donkeys has become unsustainable, and they're putting a stop to all that. Yes. So this just reinforces my assertion that the free market must be constrained by Christian love and wisdom. Yeah. A totally free market of a bunch of superstitious pagans, it may produce revenue, may produce a lot of revenue, but in short order, it begins to harm everyone. So I am a free market conservative, but the free market in and of itself is not something holy and something to be worshipped. And so, case in point, the unsustainable donkey crisis of 2016 in Africa. And the thing is we like donkeys around here. Several of our neighbors have donkeys. We have the opportunity to see the donkeys sometimes when we're driving. And we don't want, well, we just don't see the point in boiling their skin to make some pagan superstitious poultice that cures a half a dozen or more maladies. We're not buying it here at the Weekly Worldview. That's all. Are we worried about the internet? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer. The United States is apparently handing over management of the internet online address system to a global nonprofit entity, the Commerce Department. This is according to the French press agency. The Commerce Department says its contract has expired with the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, also known as ICANN. And they say the move is a part of a decades-old plan by the U.S. to privatize the Internet. Critics argue that we've given away the Internet, Washington gave it away, and this could allow an authoritarian regime or regimes to seize control of the Internet. To which I say, how's that? I mean, let's say some African dictator or Kim Jong-un over in North Korea decides they're going to hijack the internet. Wouldn't we just build another one? I would think we would be able to build another one. And anyway, how is a third world dictator or an authoritarian regime going to seize control of, all this communications infrastructure all over the world? I'm really not too worried about it. I think privatization generally is a good thing. I'm not afraid of it, but perhaps I don't understand it as well as I should. Maybe I should be worried that the internet is going to be taken over by socialists and liberals. I think the internet's already run by those people. So, again, I don't see the big deal. I'm not very worried. I wasn't even going to do that story. And now I understand why. But how's this? The Moto bag. This is good news from the Telegraph over in London. This is a carry-on suitcase with a motor, a steering pole, and brakes, and you can drive it all the way to the gate. It reaches speeds, an average of 5 miles an hour for indoors, 8 miles an hour for outdoors, and I like that idea. That's all. If you're going to be in an airport, which is a lot like being in prison, at least you could have the illusion of some control over your situation by driving your little motorized carry-on bag. I like that idea. That's from our science file. Straight up, that's applied science, by the way. Yes, the same technology that drives the hover round can now get you to the flight on time. Indeed, a great idea. Now, let's go a little bit deeper into the science file. As we look at a new study, The Guardian in London is reporting that a new study suggests that humans are predisposed to murder one another. This is brand new research, hot off the presses. Researchers say that humans have evolved strategies for solving problems with violence. The impact of society can greatly modify how aggressive humans are. So they basically say that mankind tends to be sinful. Well, no, they don't want to say that. They say we've evolved strategies for solving problems with violence. So they basically pointed out what we learned early in the book of Genesis, as a matter of fact. Researchers have been... Now, they say that the impact of society can greatly modify how aggressive humans are, which is basically secular researchers pointing out the need for the law, which can greatly impact how aggressive humans are. Because if you're afraid of, say, being hanged by the neck until dead if you murder someone, you may not murder someone just because of that, because of the law. So they've pointed out the fallen nature of man. They've discovered the value of the law. And researchers also say that this predisposition to murder is not carved in our genes, and the way humans organize in societies influences our level of lethal violence. Now, who are these people, and were they paid to study this? I mean, how much were they paid, and for how long? Because, well, now they've pointed out the need for the church. The way humans organize in societies influence our levels of lethal violence. So again, secular researchers pointing out what theologians have been pointing out for around 5,000 years. These facts have been fairly obvious to anyone paying attention. I mean, do you remember the story of Cain and Abel? Yeah. Uh-huh. And then God said for Cain there'd be no death penalty. And then things got really bad, and after the flood he said there will be the death penalty. If a man murders another man, he shall give life for life. Anyway, so this is all fairly well documented in the past. But we have researchers publishing in the journal Nature how they've discovered that humans are predisposed to murder. Okay, so that's brilliant, brilliant. But it is legitimate science. I will give them that. At least their conclusions are accurate, which is, that's something. Let's see, who was the author? Mark Pagel, professor of evolutionary biology at the University of Reading. Mm-hmm. Let's see, where does he point out that more study is required? That's when he tools up to apply for his next grant here. Anyway, we'll move on from that. Interesting, fairly obvious. Case in point, another school shooting this past week. USA Today reported that a 14-year-old opened fire with a handgun at a playground. He injured two and murdered one. little six-year-old boy last Wednesday afternoon. Shot two students and a teacher. The USA Today reports that the teenager was homeschooled and was not a student in the school district where he shot these people. And I just don't know what's going on with this. I have a feeling that this young man wasn't homeschooled because his parents realized that the public schools are a cesspool of psychological molestation. I have a feeling this was a troubled kid who had been kicked out of school, and he ended up homeschooled. At least that's my intuition. I guess we will find out if the story is even reported on ever again. This may be the last time you hear about it. After all, there was only one person killed, and it's already 4, 5, 6 days later. I mean, there's plenty of other carnage to be covered here and around the world. Yes, indeed. So that could be the end of that. What'll be the big story this coming week? Let's see. Will it be Donald Trump and his taxes? Does anybody? I think that the New York Times publishing Donald Trump's taxes illegally probably helps Trump in the long run, because everybody hates the New York Times. I mean, everyone who's thinking, anyways. That's my opinion. Let's see. What will it be? Daryl going to Wisconsin? Well, that won't be big news nationally, but it's big news here. Let's see here. Will Hillary Clinton have Julian Assange killed before he can release his data dump on her? Or is there even a data dump? Or is Julian Assange just cruising for girls? He wants to stand out on the balcony hoping he could pick somebody up, and then he realized that Hillary could have him sniped right there off the balcony, so, well, he canceled his big announcement. Who knows? Maybe he met someone there at the Ecuadorian embassy. And he didn't need to go cruising out on the balcony, perhaps. What's the other big news? The Department of Homeland Security warning states that the elections may not be secure. The Russians may hack into the election system, and they may hack the election for Donald Trump. Yes, that's the warning from the Department of Homeland Security. They're not saying it quite that way, but they're setting this whole thing up. And they're telling the states you might want to get some federal help in running your elections just to make sure that nothing strange goes on. No funny business. Now, you know, those Russian hackers, they're scary. You saw what they did to the Democrat National Committee, right? Wink, wink, nod, nod. Uh-huh. Anyway, that will be some grist in the news in the coming week. But the big political news this past week was the celebrations in the secular conservative media over the congressional override of Barry Ho's veto of the right to sue Saudi Arabia bill. Everybody was thrilled that here in the waning hours of Barry Ho's presidency, Congress finally works up enough stones to override one of Barry's czar-like or Caesar-like actions, so that Congress passed the bill saying that the victims of 9/11 could sue Saudi Arabia. Barry vetoed the bill because he didn't want to set a dangerous precedent, and he pretty much feels like he can do whatever he wants, and Congress overrode Barry's veto for the very first time in his presidency. And the secular conservatives were all a flutter about it, saying that Barry's finally been slapped down. He's finally been put in his place. But to me, it would seem that a nation that has to fall back on the idea that they have the right to sue another nation over an act of war in which the middle of one of the largest cities in the country was obliterated at the direction of said nation, to me, that's no sign of victory. I mean, we're going to hire lawyers. You blew up the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And we're going to sick our lawyers on you. Okay. Is that where we are, America? To me, that is not a sign of any kind of victory. It's a sign of weakness. First things first, we're going to change the rules. Better listen up. It's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host. Welcome back. Yes, yes, indeed. Soon we will have a new president. Yes. And things are going to be different. Don't tell me what difference does it make. Will it make much of a difference? Well, what we have coming at us this week is the battle for Aleppo in Syria, as the Russians and the Syrian government make their final attack. Well, what they hope to be their final attack against the Islamists that have held Aleppo and held its citizens in a state of terror for the past, how many years has it been now? 6 years? Has it been 6 years? Anyway, who would have guessed that the strategery of the President of the United States would leave our military in a theater of war with the Russians on opposite sides just as he's about to leave office? He couldn't have manipulated events any more effectively to leave any more of a catastrophe in his wake than Barry Ho has done in Syria. And it could come to a head quite soon. Well, when you have two armies on opposite sides in a theater of war, in a shooting war, well, they might shoot one another at some point. And things could get very ugly thereafter. But the pictures out of Aleppo are just heart-wrenching to see what these people have gone through and to know that to get out of this horrible situation, virtually the entire eastern half of the city will have to be razed to the ground. It's just, it's sad. But, you know, bad religion and bad government leaves people in a bad situation, and Aleppo is about as bad as it gets. If there's anywhere on earth right now that could be described as hell on earth, it is Aleppo, Syria. And let's just hope that we're not looking at the Third World War, for crying out loud, with this bumbling, idiotic child in the White House and the yes men he has surrounded himself with in the Department of Defense and the military. It's just, it's distressing, that's all. And so that will probably be the carnage that we see this week, at least the featured carnage amongst the secular media, although there will be plenty of domestic carnage to be reported as well. Just check your local listings. Case in point there, we go to El Cajon, California. You all have heard the story of he was a Ugandan emigre. He was shot down by police. And now there's been protests out there in El Cajon on the east side of San Diego County going on for the better part of last week. 38-year-old Alfred Olango was, I saw the video. I will read from the CBS 8 San Diego report. Olango had his hands raised when shots rang out. Do you hear how they report that? He had his hands raised. That's an interesting way to put it. For the reporters there at Local 8 there at CBS. He had his hands raised, all right. Police said Olango was uncooperative. He had repeatedly refused to remove his hand from his pocket. And then he assumed what appeared to be a shooting stance. So technically, yes, he had his hands raised, but he had them raised as if he were holding a gun, and he pointed it at police. And then they shot him dead. Now, the object that Olango was pointing at the police turned out to be an e-cigarette. Note to e-cigarette users, don't point them at the police when they have guns pointed at your head and your chest. Have you ever found yourself in a situation where you were surrounded by several police officers who had their guns pointed at your head and torso? Have you ever been? I have been in that situation, just by chance. Through no fault of my own. Actually, it was through some fault of my own. I emerged from an apartment one time when I was much younger to find, to my surprise, that I was surrounded by San Diego County sheriffs and Oceanside police, and they all had their guns pointed at me. What I did was I put my hands up, and I said, don't shoot. Literally, hands up. don't shoot. And then they did not shoot me, but maybe only because I was white. Do you think it's possible? So what I did was I very slowly did exactly what they told me until they frisked me and found out that I was not a threat, and then they let me go. But Mr. Olongo, he pointed an e-cigarette at the police, which is a bad move, whether you're black, white, or anywhere in between. That's not a smart move. I think this is yet another obvious suicide by cop. Here's a mentally deranged person who, for whatever reason, decided he wanted to die. And he arranged to have the police help him with that. Why else do you point an e-cigarette at a man who has a 9mm pistol aimed at your forehead? But that does not stop the rioters. The rioters have been going on in the El Cajon area. Protesters maintain the shooting was unwarranted and racially motivated. They have stopped vehicles over this past week, broken car windows, knocked a motorcyclist off his motorcycle, and just generally gone on a rampage over a mentally deranged person who committed suicide by cop. It's the police we should feel sorry for. Can you imagine being put into a position where you have to shoot some poor slob who's obviously mentally ill? I mean, that's got to be brutal to deal with. I feel sorry for the police officers who had to shoot this fellow. And we shouldn't be rioting. We should be setting up a support system for the poor police who continue to be victimized by mentally ill people who want to kill themselves. And for whatever reason, in this culture, this atmosphere of recent days, it has become more and more convenient to arrange for the police to kill you instead of killing yourself. And all that's very disturbing. My guess is that the riots and the protests in El Cajon will die out and fade away by the end of the week, because there will be yet another. There will be yet another police shooting that the agitators will latch onto and ratchet up, and CNN will roll the cameras and Fox News and MSNBC. And it will all just keep replaying and replaying until when. I don't know when. I don't know how this ends up. But it's already not good, so I don't know that it can end up good. It's very bad. But that's where we are. In fact, the UN, a committee at the Student Council there at the UN, the working group of experts on people of African descent that reports to the UNHigh Commissioner on Human Rights, it's a group of human rights lawyers working over there at the UN. They have issued a report stating that black people are owed reparations. That's right, reparations. They say, let's see, this group of lawyers working for the Student Council there at the UN, they say contemporary police killings and the trauma that they create are reminiscent of the past racial terror of lynching. Okay. Really. So we know now what Barry Ho's next stop is along the road he's traveling with his fellow travelers. It's got to be at the UN. Maybe Barry Ho will be the UNHigh Commissioner on Human Rights, and he will administer the payments of reparations, or at least administer the paper hanging and the community organizing that will go on around the demand for reparations now that this relatively unknown committee here has issued their findings. Findings is what they are, yes. Domination of one group over another continues to negatively impact African Americans today. White supremacy inhibits social cohesion amongst the U.S. population. Is that what is inhibiting social cohesion? Is it white supremacy? Okay. If that's what you want to believe, living there in your cloistered world there in the UN, watching news feeds and interacting with other internationalist homos and racially obsessed lawyers, maybe that's what you believe. It's white supremacy. Okay. So this is perfect for Barry. I mean, this is a custom-made gig for him. That's right. They say that this white supremacy is a human rights crisis. It must be addressed as a matter of urgency. Yes, only Barry can solve it because he's the first post-racial human. And if he gets on board there, he's bound to smooth everything out, just like he did over the past 8 years here in America. He's made everything so much better. Let's see, the panel did note, I said, that its recommendations are non-binding. So they're non-binding. That's perfect for Barry. A make-work job at the UN, where he gets a lot of face time on camera, and he gets a fairly decent salary, along with an expense account. It's perfect. It's non-binding. It was custom-made for Barry Ho. Off to the UN. There you go. And maybe he can appoint Hillary Clinton as his secretary. Not Secretary of State or anything like that, just his secretary. She could sit at the front desk, and when salesmen come in, she could try to ward them off with stories of how busy he is, and he doesn't really have time to meet with them. And he's an important man, you see. And she could take their name and their phone number, and that would be Hillary's. Yeah, well, she'd get to sit down, you see, most of the time. She would be at a desk. She wouldn't have to languish at a lectern for 90 minutes like she had to at the debate. Yes, she'd be able to sit down, which is, I think that's her preferred stature, is the sitting position, if I'm not mistaken. All right. See, I wasn't going to do that story either because I didn't want to give any credibility to some obscure student council working group at the UN. But there's the story, just so we have it right there in black and white for everybody. Now, should we move on, or should we continue to explore the possibilities of Barack Obama with Hillary Clinton as his secretary? What would Michelle be doing? Michelle certainly is not going to condescend to be anybody's secretary. Not Michelle Obama. Certainly not. As a matter of fact, it's quite possible that Michelle Obama ends up the Secretary of the United Nations, the General Secretary, which is the boss there. She could replace, who's the unsecretary now? Does anybody even know? Is it still that Korean guy? He's extremely attractive. Audio engineer said she has no idea who it is, and neither do I. Well, if it was Michelle Obama, we'd all know who it is. And maybe Michelle and Hill team up, right? Since it's the new millennium and equality for women and break those glass ceilings and all that, maybe Barry ends up the secretary. And I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you aboard. As we'll get to some serious news now, because there is plenty of that. It's a serious world, after all. And we're going to go to a story from the Washington Post where they make a stunning revelation. They say people whose parents divorced when they were children are significantly more likely to grow up not to be religious as adults. And then they go through all the statistics and the analysis and the fact that this was a real study, a study from the Public Religion Research Institute, whatever that is. Yes, I'm sure it's a fine, upstanding institution. And they've done the research, and shazam, it's amazing. Right? They note that the traditional denominational Christian church is hemorrhaging young people. The church is hemorrhaging young people. And they say, well, it could possibly be, that these two trends are related. The one trend of divorce, perhaps as many as 50% of all marriages ending in divorce, starting in the 1980s, and the hemorrhaging of members by particularly the Protestant Church in the United States. Perhaps those two trends are related. And, of course, when parents selfishly destroy the most fundamental element of a child's life, the damage is severe and it's permanent. I mean, parents, keep in mind that you have been put in the place of God. That's in the Bible. You are in the place of God. And when you selfishly turn your back on your responsibility to your child, I don't think many adults comprehend what it means to a young child, let's say between the ages of 6 and 16, to see the one relationship in which they've invested complete and total trust, that this relationship is the foundation of their safety and their security and everything in their life. I don't think most adults comprehend the damage that that does to their children, even though a lot of them experienced it, which is odd to consider, which again, is just more evidence of the fallen nature of mankind that we discovered through that. What was the research we talked about earlier? Ah, yes. Humans are predisposed to murder one another and be violent with one another. And it's just another example of how the researchers are confirming what God and the prophets told us, well, over and over and over and over again from the beginning. But yes, of course, divorce leads to children growing up not wanting a religion and maybe even hating God because their parents, who were in the place of God, shattered their entire life at a very early and tender age. And it's just sad to think about what happens to young kids and how the damage is so permanent and so disabling. But to the Protestant church, perhaps we have a solution here from Ottawa, Canada. The Washington Post reports that the Right Reverend Greta Vosper is a dynamic activist minister with a loyal following at her Protestant congregation in suburban Toronto. Perhaps it's a right reverend like Greta who can restore the Protestant church and stop the hemorrhaging of young members. She is, well, she's dynamic, she's activist, and she is also an outspoken atheist. That's right. She's the reverend there at the, the United Church of Canada. Let's see. She says, at our church, we don't talk about God, eh? It's time the church gave up on the idolatry of a theistic God, for crying out loud, says the Right Reverend Greta. Yes, she has publicly rejected God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit. But in place of that, she has constructed a community that will help them, that will help people create meaningful lives without God, you see. That's what she's all about. Uh-huh. Well, the leaders of the church, and this is not your most conservative church. I mean, they long ago accepted the ordination of women. They embrace the LGBT sex pervert community. And they perform same-sex weddings there at the United Church of Canada, eh? But this, with an atheist right there in the pulpit, this might go too far, eh? I mean, come on. We have to maintain some standards, don't you think? It's Canada's largest Protestant denomination, by the way. And the leadership there say they are going to meet, and they're going to have a meeting and a discussion. They're going to share with one another. They're going to appoint a committee and a study group, do some focus groups, and perhaps consider the possibility of stripping the Right Reverend Greta Vosper of her position as a minister of Jesus Christ, seeing as she's an atheist, eh? That's right. Let's see. The Toronto Conference has requested a formal hearing of the General Council to consider the question of whether an atheist can stand there and preach the gospel, for crying out loud. I mean, it's modern-day Canada, okay? Let's see. We have a statement from one of the leaders of the church. No, this is a statement from the church, because none of the leaders wanted to actually stand up in front of reporters with cameras and answer questions about the atheist in the pulpit. That could be a little uncomfortable, eh? The church says, in our opinion, she is not suitable to continue in ordained ministry because she does not believe in God, Jesus Christ, or the Holy Spirit, eh? Is that not enough, for crying out loud? Well, apparently. Also, she does not recognize the primacy of Scripture. She will not conduct the sacraments. She rejects the essential doctrine of the church. So we're going to consider maybe possibly having a meeting to study whether or not we should consider a vote of the entire leadership to perhaps remove her from. Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, once you've embraced the homos and you're performing same-sex weddings, I mean, why not just let atheists? I mean, wouldn't it be appropriate for an atheist to be at this church? I mean, it's not called the Church of Jesus Christ. It's called the Church of Canada, right? Which is loaded with a pile of homos, for crying out loud. Let's see. The United Church of Canada, by the way, just so you have a little bit of historical context, was founded in 1925 as a merger of several denominations. You know what happens with the Protestants, right? What happens is there's a church split, and this half joins another church, and there's always new churches. Because in the Protestant community, there's still some semblance of doctrine. There's still some things that we say you have to be. Unlike the Catholic Church, which just gets more and more wicked, and more weighted down with the gross heresies and wickedness. The Catholic Church never splits. The Protestant Church, every 3 weeks, you get a split. Well, that happened to the United Church of Canada. They were founded in 1925, and surprisingly, they have seen their numbers fall sharply in recent years. You know, I wonder if there are still Canadians who are actually interested in the Word of God and who actually care about right and wrong and sin and justice and eternal damnation even. I think there are. There are plenty of them, and they are leaving the secular Protestant church. Have I coined a new term, the secular Protestant church? I believe I have. I will take credit for that. The modern secular Protestant church in the West is hemorrhaging members due to the fact that the church has abandoned God. And a lot of people in the pews, they actually want God. They want to know who he is and what he said. They want to know the truth. Even if it makes them uncomfortable and have to look in the mirror sometimes and say, you know, I'm a sinner. That's what they want. That's what they need. But the United Church of Canada isn't giving it to them. Well, back to the Right Reverend Greta. She has said that if the church declares her unsuitable, that she will leave. That's right. She won't let them kick her out. She is going to leave in a bit of a hissy fit there. She says, here's what the Right Reverend says. I am not interested in remaining in a church that won't accept me, she says. So Do you see what's happening here? This is what happens with so many secular religionists. Yeah, they reject God because he makes them uncomfortable with their own sin and their own appetites that they indulge regularly. And they end up demanding that God accept them and their sin. Because she's not just demanding that the church accept her. She's demanding that God accept her and her sin because she wants to put on the robe with the cross and she wants to give the message on Sunday. So she is demanding that God accept her and her sin. So I had this, I don't want to get into a theological thing, but I've only got a little bit, so I'll try to wrap this up. Had a conversation with a friend, a close friend, about whether or not someone who openly, actively rejects God and encourages other people to do so could be saved. And I said, I don't think so. Right? I don't think that if you reject God, you reject right and wrong, you reject the God-given ordinances of the universe, and then you encourage other people to do the same, I don't think that you can go to heaven. And this friend of mine said, well, wait a minute. I subscribe to the theology of once saved, always saved. And so let's say the Right Reverend Greta here, she says she became an atheist about 15 years ago. But before that, she was a Christian. And so my friend said, well, what if she genuinely got saved 25 years ago, and then 15 years ago, she rejected God and did whatever, became an atheist in the pulpit and all that. Isn't she once saved, always saved? Are we going to throw out our theology just because we disagree with what the Right Reverend Greta has done here? He said, I'm not willing to throw out my theology for that. I think there's a good chance that... No, he didn't say there's a good chance. He said, I think that she's saved. Well, we weren't talking about the Right Reverend. We were talking about some other vulgar, gross heathen who hates God and talks against God. But a similar situation. So my friend said he's not willing to throw out the tenet of once saved, always saved, just because someone goes bad and ends up actively hating and advocating the hatred of Jesus Christ. Well, I'm just not so sure about that. Because I'm not sure once saved, always saved is some kind of magical potion, some magical equation by which God's hands are now eternally tied because, well, once saved, always saved, you know, it's right there. Anyway, I think that if someone doesn't want to be saved, they won't be. That's all. And maybe she was saved. Can you lose your salvation? No. I don't think you can lose it. Can you throw it away? Well, I think that's a possibility. And I think it's quite possible that the Right Reverend Greta might make it to heaven, but she's not going to stay for very long. Thank you very much, boys. Canada's premier power trio finds their way into the Weekly Worldview in a story about, well, there was no marijuana in that story, but still, it was Canadians. And there's the... So we were discussing in the break, you know, what about Sam Kinison? He was some kind of preacher, right? So my extremely attractive audio engineer has posited the idea that perhaps these people were never saved. And I'm not sure if they were. I don't know. I'm no theologian. What's that? God will sort it out, that's for sure. And if you don't want to hang out with him in the afterlife, he is certainly not going to make you. And I don't think the Right Reverend Greta would be comfortable. And I don't think Sammy Kinison would be comfortable either, which is why I believe he's burning in hell right now. Yeah, There you go. All right. Now, that was from the Sad Religion file. You know, we're dating ourselves by mentioning Sam Kinison. People are going on Google right now. Who's this guy? Sam Kinison. This guy. All right. To the Domestic Tranquility file, if you've been wondering if mankind is predisposed to murder, let's go to Indiana, where two Indiana children were found dead in a vehicle hours after an Amber Alert was issued for them. Liliana Hernandez and Renee Pastor, 7 years old and 6 years old, respectively, had been abducted by their non-custodial mother, and she murdered them. She drove up to an officer from the Elkhart, Indiana Police Department. She was pulled over, and she told the police officer there were two dead children in the backseat of her car. And police arrested her on two counts of murder. That's just domestic tranquility in America. There's no big, I don't have a big analysis of the story. I found it shocking that a mother would murder her two children and then nonchalantly tell the officer that there's two dead children in the back of the car. It's just horrible. From the justice file, homicides are up in the largest spike since 1971. Despite the fact that all the politicians and all the news media, if you look at the statistics just right, you know, crime is, you know, it's actually down. But we're seeing the largest surge in murders since, in over 40 years. The biggest year, 2014 to 15 was the biggest single year increase since 1971. Now, since Ferguson, this is a WorldNet Daily story. Since Ferguson, President Obama repeatedly has charged that institutional racism among law enforcement officers is one of the reasons. But others say that it's the Ferguson effect. It's the reluctance of police officers to confront black citizens suspected of criminal behavior in the aftermath of Ferguson. And WorldNet Daily, even though they're a conservative outlet, they say black teen Michael Brown was shot by white police officer. Yada, yada, yada. Black teen. All right. Then they go through the statistics, which are shocking. Over 90,000 rapes, 2014 to 2015. Over 1 million violent crimes. Over almost 16,000 murders, 90,000 rapes. Over 300,000 robberies. FBI chief Jim Comey, he says the statistics need to be monitored more closely. Yeah, he's the head of the FBI. He's got a solution for the murder epidemic. Let's study those statistics. They need to be monitored on a daily basis, analyzed, monitored. And in some cases, there will be no reasonable case for prosecution. Sure, that happens, you know. No reasonable prosecutor in some situations are going to seek to prosecute a case such as, I don't know, Hillary Clinton and her treasonous behavior with our national security, perhaps. But Mr. Comey, perhaps if he studies and monitors the statistics more closely, he'll figure out cases in which people can be prosecuted, and then perhaps FBI prosecution will lead to a decrease in the explosive rate of violent crime here in America. All right, now, more from the justice file. We go to Trenton, New Jersey, where the American Civil Liberties Union is now representing the man accused of setting off bombs in New York and New Jersey, injuring more than 30 people. That's right. The ACLU will defend Ahmed Khan Rahami because, well, frankly, nobody else will. So what do you do when you're an Islamic terrorist hell-bent on the destruction of Israel, America, and all the Jews? What do? You go to Alexander Shalom and Udi Ofer, attorneys at the ACLU. Two suicidal idiot Jewish children are going to defend an Islamic terror bomber because they're good lawyers. That's it. As I said, Udi Ofer and Alexander Shalom, ironically, will be defending Ahmed Khan Rahami unless he chops their heads off, at which point they would have to hand him off to other lawyers. Hopefully they won't be in a room with him with anything sharp. Now, one of the suicidal idiot Jewish children lawyers says, quote, "It's outrageous that Mr. Rahami has been in custody for a week, yet he's been denied the right to have an attorney there. An attorney, I said, to come and visit him, to confirm his condition, and to protect all of his constitutional rights, and that's why I am here. Thank you very much. Yes. All right. That's Udi. No, that was Alexander Shalom in reference to Ahmed the Mad Bomber. The most ironic story of the week. I think we'd all have to agree on that. Now, not only did Barack Obama ship $400 million in cash to our sworn enemies in Iran, but apparently he's also agreed to lifting United Nations sanctions on two of Iranian's biggest state banks. Yes, yes. And he made that deal, oddly enough, on the same day that Tehran released four American citizens from prison. Did you catch that? Barry lifted the sanctions off of two of Iran's state banks the day the prisoners were released. Yeah, these sanctions, according to the Wall Street Journal, were not initially. They weren't to be lifted until 2023, but somehow in the dark of night on January 16th, just as the prisoners were being released, wow, Barry signed a deal lifting the sanctions on the bank. The same day, January 16th was the dark of night when Barry signed the deal and packed up the pallets full of cash. It was January 17th that the American hostages were released. A senior State Department official said that him and the Iranians signed into documents in Geneva in the early morning hours of January 17th. They did three things: drop criminal charges against 21 Iranian nationals, transfer $400 million in cash, and immediately lift the sanctions on the two Iranian banks. But there was no quid pro quo. This was not a ransom per se. I mean, not in the traditional sense. I mean, in a ransom, you would, like, hand over big bags full of cash, like, at night or something. This was different. This was nighttime, and, it was pallets of cash, but then we also signed some agreements, so there. It's not a traditional ransom in the traditional sense. Now, congressional officials here in the United States believe that the move broke commitments the administration made to Congress about the Iranian deal. Congress feels like perhaps they were misled and then double-crossed by Barack Obama. Yeah, these are some smart fellows we have in Congress. You can't get too much by these guys, by golly. You see, Obama told Congress that he would only lift sanctions only on companies and individuals tied to Iran's nuclear development, but it turns out he lifted sanctions on two of their biggest state banks. The Republicans feel double-crossed. What will they do about it? Nothing. Nothing. They're going to punish Barack Obama by making sure he is not reelected as the president. That's their only option there. Let's see. Now, Barry says, according to McClatchy News out of Washington, D.C., Barry says he's going to talk a little bit more openly about things after he leaves office. He says that right now, with the power that the president has and the position, there also comes a whole host of institutional constraints. There are things I cannot say. And he was asked by a reporter, you mean right now, but you will be able to say them later. To which Barry replied, well, there are institutional obligations I have to carry out that are important for a president to carry out, but may not always align with what I think would move the ball down the field on the issues that I care most deeply about. You see, I'm made to do things as the president that bolster America and lift America up in the eyes of the world and the people, and sometimes that makes me very uncomfortable because I hate my father too. You see, I'm, yes. All right, I'll move on. He goes on in this interview where he's talking about his presidency and da-da-da. And listen to what he says. I think this is a very revealing line about the mindset of one Barack Hussein Obama. He says, you know, when Trayvon Martin was first shot, I said this could have been my son, blah, 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 blah. Right? We all remember that, right? But look at the way Barry refers to Trayvon Martin. He says, you know, when Trayvon Martin was first shot, meaning that in Barack Obama's mind, there is a continuum of police shootings and shootings of young black men that go back to Trayvon Martin and go all the way to El Cajon or whatever the next one is. These are all a continuum in Barry Ho's mind because he says, you know, when Trayvon Martin was first shot, well, what does that mean when he was first shot? What does it mean to be first shot? You mean he got shot for a long time? No. It means Barack Obama views, he has a particular paradigm view of what's happening. Probably because he's organizing it. He's hanging the paper and organizing the communities, directing the money of his good friend, George Soros. And this is probably the most important issue to Barack Obama right now, is the Black Lives Matter movement. Because it will be them, whenever Barry goes into the Un-High Commissioner and becomes the head of the Student Council study group on the rights of, well, what was it, people of African descent? Well, what do you think Barry's going to be doing? He's going to be out promoting the Black Lives Matter movement and all of that. And so, well, I guess we've given you our prediction for Barack Obama's political future. And now I'm almost out of time, and I have a number of stories that my extremely attractive audio engineer will be very glad that I can't get to, because they involve a certain lifestyle choice that's disgusting. So we'll just end with a couple of quick hits on some stories that are guaranteed not to make my extremely attractive audio engineer ill or in any other way uncomfortable. We'll go to the New York Post, where the city council in New York, the student council there, has allocated $100,000 to study whether it makes sense to open supervised injection facilities where intravenous drug users can shoot up under medical supervision. They're going to study that. This is how it works. You start with $100,000, right? We're just going to study the idea. Once I get all my cousins and nephews and dim-witted daughters-in-law in place, then we're going to set up an organization. That's when we go for the $5 to $10 million grant, and we set up these places to have people shooting up all over New York. Yes. Student Council Speaker Melissa says, well, it's been done and implemented in other areas of the world, so we just want to look up what the viability would be here in New York. And it just so happens that my cousin has a psychology degree and he happens to be looking for employment, and I think this will be perfect for him. And we could help prevent drug overdoses, HIV, and hepatitis infection. And most importantly, what my nephew now, he also has a degree. He's unfortunately unemployed. He is a specialist in connecting addicts with drug treatment options, you see. And they could work together, and we could get it. And all it takes is $100,000 to start, okay? But we're not asking for the world here. Just help us out. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the Associated Press reports that the Washington Monument is closing indefinitely because a growing sense of unworthiness amongst the ruling class and the fact that many in Washington look at each other and wonder, just what is that really tall obelisk? Who is that named after anyway? What's the deal there? Well, no, it's not that. No, it's not that. Actually, the elevator is broken. And they say that they're going to start a process that could take up to 9 months just to figure out how to fix the elevator. Yes, they've announced a $3 million project to study how to fix an elevator. Park Service officials don't know exactly what's wrong with the elevator, but they've only been inspecting it for about a month. And you know how complicated elevators can be. That's a very sophisticated, high-technology device. And they're basically saying, look, the Washington Monument may never open again. And if it does, you're going to have to use the stairs. But my brother-in-law's company is working on it as we speak. He's been working on it for a month. He could have a breakthrough at any moment, and we could figure it all out. That's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview. Thank you for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV and AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, on his way to Wisconsin, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.